Perfect Stranglers contains graphic and explicit content suitable for mature listeners. Listener discretion is advised.
Hi everyone, welcome to Perfect Stranglers. My name is Kylie.
And I'm Brie.
And I'm Nicole.
And I'm a special guest, Chelsea.
Chelsea!
Holla! Bah, 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 bah. So, you guys, it's been a while. Who sings that? The song. You know the song. It's been
Stained.
A while.
Yeah.
Is Stained. That Stained?
Yeah.
Okay. So, I was thinking about this because on our break, there's been a resurgence of sorts of not only Brendan Fraser. I don't know if you guys know this, but y'all remember Nickelback? How everyone hated Nickelback?
Yeah.
There has been this weird resurgence of Gen Z people, like, really digging Nickelback, and they're not, like, hated like they used to be. Does anyone else find that weird?
Is this, like, ironically?
No, a lot of people are like, dude, why do millennials hate Nickelback? Like, their songs are catchy, and the guy has a good voice.
Okay.
And I'm like...
Here's the thing.
Okay.
If I didn't grow up in that era... listening to all the other rock music that was going on at the same time, I might think that too. If you take Nickelback out of context, you might think that.
Gen Z is bringing all the 90s back. They're the ones bringing back all that fashion and everything. They want to be millennials so bad.
They do.
They want to be millennials when millennials were children. And I'm like, no, get your own fucking style. Oh, wait, you don't know how. Yeah. You don't know how. I am sorry if any of you are. No, you know what? I've seen the analytics. Not a lot of you are that age. Never mind. Fuck you.
I will say their slang is just awful. My 40-year-old boyfriend said the word bussin' the other day.
Oh, like, come on.
No, you can't do that. He said, you know, he said it jokingly, but I'm just like, no, I can't do that.
No, you can't do that. So there's that slang, but then I also remember my sister's slang, and I remember her saying things like, gag me with a spoon.
Yeah.
Do you remember that saying? Ew, like, gag me with a spoon.
Tubular.
Yeah.
What are these
Nicole's
words?
Like, oh, yeah. Nicole's 25.
Baby. What a baby.
Yeah. Yeah. God. How our language has... As if. Ew. Whatever. But I also want to say ew. And ew has survived the test of time.
Yeah.
That is the one true word that truly has survived the test of time.
Ew, and I love it.
Ew, David.
There it is.
Ew.
I always think of the Jimmy Kimmel, Fallon.
Jimmy Fallon. Hi, Jimmy my name Fallon. Is Sarah. Sarah with no L. H, because H's are ill.
Ew.
I remember when that skit first came out, and I think the first one to go like viral was the Channing Tatum one.
Yes, him in a dress.
God.
So wide.
Yeah, and the John Cena one was good too.
Yes. Oh
yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Maybe that was the one that went viral, was the John Cena one.
Yeah.
Have you guys ever like really looked at John Cena and how disproportionate he is? How massive, like, well, he's a massive dude anyway, but his arms in his arms are so fucking long. Look at him in the Suicide Squad movie. Mm-hmm. I don't think they made his body disproportionate. I think he truly just looks like this. His arms are so fucking long. His head is so big. And his legs are so short. His center of gravity has to be so fucking low.
Okay. Are his legs short? Or...
Does he skip leg day?
Where are you going with this?
No. Or... is it those long shorts he just wears all the time, and it makes it look like he has short legs? You know the John Cena shorts what I'm talking about?
No, guys, I think it's actually just he has short legs. Look at this picture.
I do. He has really short legs.
Can you see it? Look at this.
Yeah, he truly really has very short legs.
He's the one with the red shirt. right?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Like, look at how long, when you look, like, if you stand yeah. up next to yourself, like, my arms go, like, maybe mid-hip or whatever. Like, eh. Like, I don't know. Like, barely, like, upper thigh. His fingertips would almost reach his knees. If he mm-hmm. extended his fingers, look at how long yeah. his arms are. Swear to God.
Yeah.
So there's that. And then, have you ever heard Matthew McConaughey has really short arms?
No. I never noticed. Uh-uh.
And then Henry Cavill apparently has really small hands. This is Welcome to Perfect Stranglers, guys. I hope y'all are Googling along.
I mean, it kind of ties into the episode today.
It does.
Hollywood.
Yeah, I'm going to be doing Hollywood curses, but first let's look at the curse of the short arms. Look, he looks like a fucking T-Rex. I mean, jogging, Matthew McConaughey. Look up Matthew McConaughey jogging and look how fucking short his fucking arms are.
Also, you're welcome for that suggestion.
Yeah. Wait, for what suggestion? The Matthew McConaughey one or the Hollywood curse?
For looking up Matthew McConaughey running because, you know, oh. he doesn't like wearing shirts.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah. And then Henry Cavill has really tiny arms. Or not arms. Henry Cavill has really tiny hands. And that hurts my heart because him and The Witcher, oh, baby. Oh, yeah. babe. That is my type. That's my type. Anyway. Bree, do you want to do housekeeping?
Sure. Don't forget to like and rate our podcast on Apple Podcasts. It helps us get seen and it helps people find us. Also, don't forget to subscribe to us on whatever platform you listen to us on so you'll never miss an episode. We also want to hear from you on our social media, Facebook, Instagram, and the Twitter that we rarely use. Yeah. We also want to hear your stories of true weird things that have happened to you, so email us at contact@perfectstranglers.com, and while you're at it, check out our website, which is perfectstranglers.com.
All right, you guys, you ready?
Yep.
Okay, we're going to get into some Hollywood curses here.
This is so interesting to me.
As we all know, I am a little fucking bitch, and I have never seen any of these movies. Well, no, I've seen The Exorcist. But I have not seen the other two because I won't watch a horror movie. So all of my recaps I got from the Google machine.
Can I ask you something?
Yeah.
You were worried about being a little bitch in a past life, but you're not worried about being a little bitch in this one.
No. No, because I have control about my little bitchness. I am proud of being a little bitch about horror movies, and I'll tell you why. Because it always takes people by surprise that I hate horror movies. Every single person
it's
I tell
so
that I
contradictory.
I know it is. Every time I tell people that I won't watch a horror movie, they go, "Wait, what?" And I go, "Yeah, fuck that shit." Yeah, I hate them. Fucking hate them.
Sorry, I'm, like, really ragging on you today. I'm just...
No, it's fine, because it's completely, like, earned. Like, yeah, dude, I will not watch a horror movie, and I know that it doesn't fit... I know it doesn't fit the brand, but right. It is what it is. Okay, so... The majority of this info comes from Screen Rant, Ranker, and a documentary called Cursed Films.
Is that from Shudder?
Yes. Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Was it a series?
Yes, it was a series. There was some chunks I could not. I had to listen to it and like not watch it because again, little bitch over here. Yeah.
Title of the episode: Kylie is a little bitch.
Kylie is a little bitch. Hey, I am owning it. I am owning it.
Good.
Okay, so we're gonna start with Poltergeist. So Poltergeist was released in 1982. The original one was directed by Tobe Hooper. And produced by Mr. Steven Spielberg. And it was an instant success and is, to this day, considered to be, like, a masterpiece among American horror films, especially for the time. It was very scary for the time. The movie focuses on the Freelings, a middle-class family whose life is upturned when vicious paranormal events occurs in their California home. And their daughter, Carol Ann, is abducted through her bedroom closet by a group of ghosts who are under the control of a demon called the Beast. So, in the movie, after learning that their house sits atop a Native American burial ground, the Freelings spend their time attempting to retrieve Carol Ann while simultaneously trying to stay sane as they get their asses smacked around, terrorized, and someone gets ectoplasmed on in the bathtub. So that's my synopsis of a movie I've never seen.
That's not a very scary movie, if you ask me.
I've never seen it.
I just can't do jump scares. I can't do jump scares.
I don't think there's a lot of jump scares.
Kylie, I have seen that movie.
It's not scary.
Has seen that movie by herself.
If you've seen The Exorcist, you can definitely handle the Poltergeist movie.
Yes. Yes.
I just feel like I need to live stream me watching these movies so everyone can witness this.
Like, honestly, that movie's boring to me, to be honest with you.
So, yeah. With Poltergeists, I don't know. With its success. Chelsea, can you confirm whether or not multiple poltergeists are the poltergeist?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure poltergeist. Like octopi.
Yeah. Yes.
Oh my god. Poltergeist. Okay, with the movie's success came a creepy mystique that the film cast, crew, and set were all surrounded by real-life tragedies that a lot of people have interpreted as a curse. So, to start off, 4 cast members died during and soon after filming of the series. So, the series is all 3 movies that released in the 80s. The majority of the feel for the alleged curse stems from those deaths of the cast members. And 2 of the deaths were highly unexpected, leading many fans to speculate the trilogy's implications on everyone else that was involved with it. So death number 1 was Heather O'Rourke. So Carol Ann Freeling, the main character of the series, who is played by Heather, she was like kind of seen as like a perfect juxtaposition of her versus the film. To me, she had baby blonde hair, she looked like a doll, and she honestly kind of reminds me of the drawing of Sally from the Sally House.
Yes,
where she just looks super innocent. Hair. Yes, and not as round of a face, but still like, yeah, that's kind of what she reminded me of when I looked at her. Yeah. She was misdiagnosed with Crohn's disease in 1987, which that time frame landed between the second and the third movie. The following year, O'Rourke became sick again, and her symptoms were just casually attributed just to the flu. A day later, she collapsed and suffered a cardiac arrest, and after being airlifted to a children's hospital in San Diego, O'Rourke died during an operation to correct a bowel obstruction. It was later believed that she had been suffering from a congenital intestinal abnormality. So that was the first unexpected death. The second one was from... Yeah. The second one was from Dominique Dunn. She played the original older sister, Dana Freeling, in 1982. In real life, Dunn separated from her partner, John Sweeney, and in November of that year, he showed up to Dunn's house pleading for her to take him back. When she refused, Sweeney grabbed Dunn's neck, choked her until she was unconscious, and left her to die in her Hollywood home's driveway. Sweeney was then sentenced to 6.5 years in prison, but was released after 3 years and 7 months.
Just want to add Heather Rourke. That's her name.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Carol Ann.
Yeah. Heather O'Rourke. Yep.
If I'm not mistaken, I believe she was the voice of Ducky from The Land Before Time.
Oh, yep. 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 Really?
Actually, I think it says on her gravestone, it says, yep, yep, yep.
Cute.
Oh, that's so cute.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, deaths 3 and 4 were Julian Beck and Will Sampson. So the 2 other cast members' deaths, while unfortunate, were not as unpredictable or mysterious. The evil preacher Kane from Poltergeist 2 was played by Julian Beck. In 1983, Beck was diagnosed with stomach cancer, which took his life very soon after he finished work on the second film. The same film was met with further tragedy after Will Sampson, who played Taylor, the Native American shaman in the film, died after undergoing a heart-lung transplant, which also had just like a very slim survival rate anyway. Some other strange things that happened was Jo Beth Williams, who played the mom, Diane Freeling, in the first two films, she claimed that director Steven Spielberg insisted on actual human skeletons as props in an attempt to save money, and at the time, they were actually cheaper than plastic skeletons. And this is actually a fact. It has been confirmed that the skeletons were, in fact, human. However, the cast didn't find that out until much later, so they wouldn't be, like, creeped out while filming. Finally, in an effort to further creep everyone out that was involved, Will Sampson, the real-life medicine man who passed away due to the circumstances we just mentioned, performed an authentic exorcism after the shooting wrapped up one night, and then they, like, went back to shoot the next day. So an exorcism was performed on set. So that's kind of the things that happened on Poltergeist. Which I don't feel like there's a curse. Let's go after each of these. Let's decide if there's a curse or not. Is there a Poltergeist curse?
No.
No.
I think that they just, yeah. I think they just hired a lot
of sick people.
Yeah.
Yep.
Agreed. Kay.
They should have had better insurance.
There was no freak deaths. It was all just like
people are sick. I don't think that there's a curse at all. So next we're going to do, I'm going to do these out of order of what I have printed. Okay, so next we're going to do The Omen. So The Omen was a cause of many nightmares for its viewers, and it was released in 1976. Today it's one of the rare films, according to Google, again, because little bitch, that still lives up to its label as a horror classic, and it's said to be one of the most haunted film productions in history. Here's the too long didn't read version from Google. The Omen follows an American diplomat named Robert, who, along with his wife, Catherine, adopts a young boy named Damien. Robert grows suspicious that his new son may be the Antichrist after death and misfortune fall upon anyone that crosses the boy's path. So the brainchild of an executive and born-again Christian named Robert Munger, he pitched the idea of The Omen to be the next, like, big blockbuster horror film following how successful The Exorcist was. So shortly after he began starting on production, Munger very, very explicitly and clearly warned everyone involved that although he hadn't had a change of heart, he knew that a movie set involving the son of the devil, the Antichrist, was sure to be cursed and would likely welcome evil events. So everyone going into this heard this warning from him, which I feel like you're just setting yourself up for failure if you're already saying that.
Like, yeah, that's inviting in the negative. You're planting it in people's minds, yeah.
Yep, that's inviting in the negative. Just saying. So, The Omen's curse began very quickly after production started, with its very first victim being Gregory Peck, who played the dad, Robert. So Peck reportedly canceled a flight he planned for unknown reasons. Some reports claim that the crew hired this plane to use for the cast, but, like, just ended up not needing it. Either way, Peck was very thankful he never got on. The plane crashed this very same day, killing all of the passengers on board, and he was supposed to be on it that day, or on that flight. Even creepier, when the plane hit the ground, it landed on a vehicle with members of the pilot's family randomly inside it.
Oh my god.
Yeah. Yeah. So the flying incidences didn't stop there. While Peck was heading to England to shoot scenes for The Omen, his airplane was struck by lightning, and this time around, no one was hurt. Peck wasn't the only member of the production team who appeared to have a curse for traveling. David Seltzer, the film's writer, took a separate flight to England on a different day to join the cast and crew 2 days after Peck. Seltzer's plane was also struck by lightning. But I do want to point out that plane getting struck by lightning isn't really rare. According to NTS Lightning Technologies, they're a company that designs tech to protect planes from lightning. The average plane is struck slightly more than once per year. So it's hit like once for every 1,000 flight hours. So it's not super common, but it's also not like super rare. Like, it definitely happens. Just thrown out there. The next we have Mace Neufeld. Macy? Mace? I don't know. Mace. We're going to go with Mace. The Omen's executive producer. He had an encounter that he dubbed more than coincidental when he, Peck, and others planned to dine out at a restaurant one evening. Before the group was to appear at the restaurant, the building was reportedly destroyed in a really violent explosion. So Neufeld kind of felt victimized by the curse again when he and his wife checked out early from their hotel in London And a short time after they checked out, the hotel was leveled by yet another explosion.
Oh my gosh.
Uh-huh. So reports from the time insisted that the IRA had been responsible for several explosions around London at the time. But the fact that he was in two of those buildings that exploded, like, it's a little odd. So the next instance, which I think is the creepiest, happened to special effects designer, the one responsible for designing the movie's graphic decapitation scene, which was apparently very gory for the time. After moving on from the film to begin his next project, he was in a head-on car crash that just so happened to decapitate his own wife.
Oh no.
And he drew the comparison to the film in hindsight and even claimed that there was a road sign on the side of the crash pointing travelers to a town called Omen, 66.6 kilometers away.
Whoa, the sign does exist. No. That's not real.
The sign does exist. The area where he did it, the crash was, like, at, was, like, very close to that area where that sign is, so it lines up. Yeah. Unfortunately, it lines up. Yeah. Even the Omen's animal trainers really kind of couldn't escape this curse, the alleged curse. In the baboon attack scene, the crew put a live baboon in the back of a car with Lee Remick, which was Damien's mother in the movie, to antagonize the ones meant to attack the vehicle, while the animal trainer hired to assist in the scene was killed the very next day. Producer Harvey Bernard detailed the death as the trainer was killed by a tiger. It grabbed him by the head, wouldn't let go, and it killed him instantly.
Oh my God.
So before, I know. And then before filming concluded, another animal incident happened. Gregory Peck's stuntman was attacked by trained Rottweilers in the cemetery scene.
Oh my gosh.
The dogs just kind of went into an absolute shitstorm frenzy. The dogs ignored all commands from their trainer for whatever reason. And it caused very, very serious injuries to the stuntman.
When they get in that mode, I'm telling you.
They don't stop.
Nope. Yeah.
And then in 2020, when the new Omen, I guess, came out in 2020. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So a new Omen came out previous, like, not in 2020, but the Omen came out previously.
Right.
Sometime recently, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So they claim to have a few accidents on set as well, but there wasn't anything, like, super, like, creepy about it. I think it was more of, like, a poltergeist situation where it was just coincidental more than, like, curse-like things. But the documentary Cursed Films did dig up some strange and maybe, like, not-so-coincidental occurrences that happened on sets. Episode 3 of the Cursed Film series goes into depth on the Omen and a string of tragic events that surround the film's making. The one that kind of raised concerns for the film is that it might be cursed by the devil himself. Experts in fields ranging from the supernatural to film production people are featured in the documentary, and they speak about the accidents that seem to accompany the making. And there's a really heavy debate on whether the circumstances are just circumstantial or if it is a coincidence. They did touch on how tackling the creation of a film that's based around the devil's son from the moment of his birth is basically inviting the curse in, like we had talked about. Like, you're just, like, gearing it up for it to happen, or, like, subconsciously putting it into people's minds. There were also really real threats that happened to everyone on the set, specifically the Omen's director, Richard Donner. He described receiving a lot of crackpot threats and terrible letters that incited explicit violence against him and anyone involved. So they, at the end of this documentary, they basically asked, is it possible that all of the outside pressure fueled a self-fulfilled prophecy for this curse to happen? And that maybe some of the misfortune that was deemed coincidental should not have been deemed coincidental. And so, like, the documentary really is like, this was a self-fulfilled prophecy. You guys made it happen, and then you invited it in, and then it happened.
Yeah.
So it kind of went towards the line of, like, yeah, there is a curse.
Yeah.
The Omen curse happened. And I kind of think that it did.
Yeah, I'm leaning
I kind of think there is an Omen curse.
Yeah, there's a couple creepy things that I don't think are coincidence.
Yeah, I think that the Omen curse is a thing. Next, we're going to touch on, we're going to do The Exorcist. Well, we'll do Rosemary's Baby. It's not a huge one. We'll do a small part of it, and then we'll go to The Exorcist. So, Rosemary's Baby, 1968 film. A failing actor agrees to give up his wife's womb to Satan so that she can have, or so that he can have a taste of fame. When it was released to America, it was an instant hit, but there's long been a rumor that the satanic overtones of the film caused a curse. Shocker, I know we're talking about curses. The Rosemary's Baby curse allegedly afflicted pretty much everyone involved, just like The Omen, the film's director and producer receiving the brunt of the bad luck. So the person we're going to talk about here is Roman Polanski. He had a lot of bad luck on this. He was definitely hit the hardest by the curse of Rosemary's Baby, and he was the director. Initially, he wanted to include his wife Sharon Tate in the film as Rosemary, but that was overruled by producer Robert Evans, who fought tooth and nail for Mia Farrow to be in the film. So Evans did get his way, and Sharon Tate was relegated to just being an unnamed extra in one of the party scenes. But a year after the film was released, Sharon Tate and some of her friends were staying in a rented house in Cielo Drive in LA when Tex Watson and some of his girls from the Manson family broke in. Watson and the girls dished out more than 100 blows between the four people, and as we know, none of them survived.
Also want to say, it wasn't just, it was her baby as well.
She was pregnant with a son.
Yes.
Very pregnant.
I want to say his name was Robert. They had already named him at that point.
Mm-hmm. The next one for Rosemary's Baby includes John Lennon. So the Dakota is one of the most famous buildings in New York, not just because it served as the exterior of the apartments for Rosemary's Baby, but because it was the site where John Lennon was assassinated. It was built in 1884. The Dakota's Gothic style gave it the perfect look for a horror movie, and producer Robert Evans claimed that the whole time on set at the apartment building, he felt a really, like, creepy, eerie feeling. And Lennon may not have had anything to do with Rosemary's Baby directly, but he was friends with Mia Farrow, and when the Manson family murdered Sharon Tate, they wrote Helter Skelter on the wall in blood, and Helter Skelter is one of the songs on the White Album, which Manson used as a blueprint for his, quote, revolution, 11 years after Tate's passing. So Lennon was murdered outside of the apartment building when Mark David Chapman put 5 rounds into the singer's back. So, indirectly but directly, other ones include Mia Farrow. She was served her divorce papers from Frank Sinatra on set.
Good riddance, honestly.
Yeah.
Fuck that guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Roman Polanski, he got in trouble with drugs and seducing a 13-year-old girl and raping her.
Gross.
Just, like, things like that. So I don't think that Rosemary's Baby is a curse, but I do just want to touch on that because of the Sharon Tate connection.
Yeah, I feel like it's more just a lot of shitty people got together and shitty things happened to them.
Which, there's a lot of shitty people in Hollywood, so.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
There is. All right, next we're going to get to the big one, The Exorcist.
Oh, woo-hoo! Can I tell the a Exorcist quick story about yeah. The Exorcist? So,
yes.
Bree and I are filming or recording right now in her parents' basement. And Bree and I have been friends since we were 5 years old, so we, like, grew up together playing in this basement. Because it's a big, unfinished basement, like, there's lots of room to just, like, play. And we were, do you remember how old we were, Bree?
When we watched The Exorcist
down
here?
Yeah.
We were in 8th grade because we were working on our National History Day project, which was about the history of Barbies, by the way. We got an honorable mention.
I have such a horrible memory. Bree has such a good memory, so I rely on her to, like, remember my life for me. But so we were gonna watch The Exorcist, and we were down here by ourselves with a TV with a VCR, and we started watching it, and we didn't even get that far in, and something scary happened. Was it when the very first, like, scary thing that happened?
Was it the white demon face that flashed?
No, that's further in. I don't know. It had to be, like, sometime. It was probably when her first time that she used that voice or something.
Oh, yeah.
Because, yeah. like, she came down the stairs at the party, and she, like, peed on the floor.
Yeah.
And then it was probably somewhere after that.
Yeah. So, like, the first very scary thing that happened, we screamed bloody murder, ejected the tape out of the machine, and threw it across the basement and ran upstairs. And I didn't watch The Exorcist again until I was, like, very well into adulthood.
Oh my god, that's hilarious.
But we had to come back downstairs to finish our project and stuff because all of our, like, poster, like, supplies and shit like that was down here. And we were trying to spend the weekend, like finishing this project. And so we had to come back downstairs eventually, and we brought a Bible with us.
Oh, yeah.
That's cute.
Yeah.
That's our little exorcist story.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
I love how everyone has an exorcist story. Speaking of exorcists, you can probably hear the possessed dog in the background of my audio. I am so sorry. I have... Okay, listen to this tea, you guys. Okay. So my neighbor right across the hall, he had this girlfriend, and she's been there for like a year. Recently, they brought in dog number two. They already had a yippy fucking annoying dog. Then they brought in dog number two. And then I kind of realized, I was like, hey, this was like 2 months ago that this happened. Maybe 3 months ago this dog was brought in. And then I realized, hey, I haven't seen this girl in a while. So I'm pretty sure that either she left both dogs there, or she maybe took one dog and the other dog is now really sad. But this dog is constantly whining now, and the guy across the way, he seems like one of those conservative berserker type people who probably has a lot of conspiracy theories and, like, definitely has a bug out bag somewhere that's way overly sized to what you would actually need. And he broke his arm. He rides on his bike a lot. He's like, I can hear him yelling to the dog, like, get over here, come on, and, like, yanking the leash. And I'm like, this guy one day is going to, I know, it makes me really mad. Like, this guy is one day going to fucking lose his shit. And I better not be here when it happens.
Gross.
I know. His mom is also here a lot, so I'm pretty sure he's a man-child.
Oh, yeah, sounds like it.
Yeah, hate it. Hate to see it.
Doomsday man-child.
Oh, is there nothing, a conservative doomsday man-child, is there anything least attractive than that?
If I could just rid the earth of them, I would.
There's nothing worse. There's truly nothing worse than a conservative doomsday man-child.
There's probably a lot in Michigan.
Yeah.
God.
They're all in the Michigan Midwest militia.
The Midwest is awful for that shit. Anyway, let's talk about The Exorcist, shall we?
Let's.
Okay. So The Exorcist was overwhelmed by controversy when it was released in 1973. Rumors surrounded it about disturbing things that had happened on set while filming. There were reports of audiences also getting sick and fainting when they went to see it in theaters. On set, accidents, a mysterious fire, and even murder all took place while the film was being made. These things raised questions at the time, and some came to believe the Exorcist movie itself was cursed. So the documentary I mentioned, Cursed Films, goes into detail about, like, the questionable things surrounding the Exorcist. On the set, there were several injuries, including long-term back injuries for both Linda Blair, who played Reagan, and Ellen Burstyn, who played Reagan's mom. There was a fire that burned down most of the set, and there was a man who played a nurse in the film. He killed a reporter before The Exorcist was released. So there's a lot of weird things that happened. So when The Exorcist was released, it was the highest grossing film of all time, but audiences reported having physical reactions to it, such as fainting and vomiting. One woman blamed a miscarriage on the film. It was said that anyone could be possessed by the film just by watching it, and that it gave evil a path to corrupt human souls. It was protested in some cities and banned in parts of the UK. Groups waiting in line outside the theaters sometimes broke out into violence. None of these rumors, however, prevented the film from being, like, incredibly successful for the time, especially for a horror movie.
And it's kind of because of these successful.
Yeah, because people want to know what all the fuss was about.
Right.
And so, like, all of these kind of lead into, like, The Exorcist is definitely one of the most notorious films of all time and probably will always be. So we're going to get into these instances in more detail. So the deaths of at least 4 people have been linked to the film, and some believe this is proof of the curse. They include Jack McGowan, who played the film director Burt Dennings in the film. He was killed by the possessed Regan McNeil on screen. So his character was attacked and possessed by Regan, who used her superhuman strength to break his neck and then flung him out of her bedroom window. Ahead of the film's release, Jack tragically died from complications relating to the flu, which he caught during the London flu epidemic in 1973. And then we have Vasiliki Malairos. I don't know. Vasiliki Malairos. I sounds like I'm drunk and I'm sorry. Who played Father Damien Kiara's mom, Damien Kiara's mom, also passed away that same year before The Exorcist hit the screen. The star, who had no previous acting experience and was cast after being spotted at a restaurant, was ruled to have died from, quote, natural causes. And there's no reason for that person to die. They were perfectly healthy. They just died from natural causes. In the film, Vasiliki's character died after being admitted to a hospital and later haunted the dreams of Father Karras. Later, while the religious man was performing an exorcism, Regan mentions his mother's name in an attempt to distract him and make him feel guilty. During the production, a number of the cast and crew, including Linda Blair, who played Regan, and Max von Sydow, who played Father Marin, also lost family members. Not only that, the son of Jason Miller, who played Father Karras, had a near-fatal motorcycle accident during filming. So there was a lot of deaths of cast members and family members directly related to this movie. None of them were freak accidents, but they were just like, why do people keep dying type of thing. The next is the fire. The Exorcist was faced with multiple production delays, but the most notable one happened early on in the production. The set for Regan's family home burned down completely in 1972 after a bird flew into a circuit box. Oddly enough, the only part of the set that survived and was kind of barely touched was the bedroom where the exorcisms would take place. Film historian Sarah Krauth said in an interview, this set production back significantly and led to a draining shoot period that stretched on over a year. And after this incident, it freaked them out enough that it actually caused them to call a real Jesuit priest, Thomas M. King, who actually went on and blessed the set. So I feel like that's weird that everything burned down except for the bedroom. Next, we have the injuries. Yeah. Next, we have the injuries. Ellen Burstyn, who played Regan's mom, Chris McNeil, suffered a spinal injury while being hoisted around on a harness. She was left on crutches for the rest of the production and recalled the incident during a 2018 interview with The Guardian. Ellen told William Friedkin, the film's director, that a crew member was, quote, pulling me too hard, but she claimed that he dismissed her concerns. She said, Billy said, well, it has to look real. And I said, I know it has to look real, but I'm telling you, I could get hurt. The actress alleged that the director made a signal and the cameraman smashed me to the floor, he said, after the complaint. She went on to say, I was screaming at the top of my lungs through my screens. I said, turn the fucking camera off. Mr. Friedkin rejected Ellen's claims and said, I'm sure she was hurt by the fall. You fall on your backside, it's going to hurt. But she wasn't injured, which is such a fucking man thing to say.
She broke her back. That broke her back. And in that scene, her screaming is her actually screaming in pain.
Like, So we're going to touch on that. So that's Linda Blair.
Oh, I thought it was... Oh, okay. On the bed or whatever? Because, like, one of them, like, a guy, like, jerked her back.
Yeah. So both of them have really similar accidents. Linda Blair is the one who actually ended up getting broke.
Oh, okay. Okay, okay.
But both of them are really, really similar. Yeah, both of them are very similar, though. So Linda also claimed that the poor rigging that she had contributed to her developing scoliosis in a USA Today interview. She said the moment she fractured her lower spine was actually the footage that was used in the movie. In Curse Films, she said, in this particular take,
The lacing came loose, and she said, "I'm crying, I'm screaming, they think I'm acting up a storm. It was actually my fractured lower spine." Linda went on to suffer injuries on other film sets as well, including a motorcycle accident and multiple falls from horses throughout her acting career. So, yeah, when she's being flung around and you see her screaming and stuff, she's like a real human being, not actor, screaming in pain because she just fucking broke her back. And that's what they used, which is unreal.
I mean, it makes for a great horror movie, but ouch.
But still, yeah, and now, like, anyone who watches that, now you know, like, that's a child in pain because she was a child.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, like, you're a child and you break your back. That's going to affect how you grow, like, for the rest of your life. And then the fainting, vomiting, and controversy during its release. So during one screening in Rome, it was reported that a bolt of lightning struck a church opposite of the movie theater. In America, one woman, quote, passed out and broke her jaw and later sued Warner Brothers for an undisclosed amount. In the UK, it was reported that St. John's ambulance staff attended screenings to help distressed moviegoers. Claims about The Exorcist's curse continued, and according to film historian and horror expert Sarah Crowther, it was used as a marketing tool for the film. She believed, kind of what we already said, putting the movie out during a major religious festival, it was actually released on Boxing Day, gave some indication of the studio's intent to spark controversy and debate. She believed Warner Brothers spread speculation of the curse, which helped the film to become an extremely hot topic to the press. And she went on to say, newspapers and TV news screens were filled with stories of audience members fainting and vomiting and walking out in large numbers at early screenings. And that no doubt made people want to go and see what all of the, again, what all the fuss was about. Mm. And that is The Exorcist curse. Is The Exorcist cursed or not? Or is it just a bunch of accidents again? The only thing that gets me is the bedroom that didn't burn down.
Yeah, the fire thing.
The fire.
Yeah. The other stuff is explainable, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's explainable. To me, a lot of people like curse, they confuse, okay. A curse and bad luck, the bad luck has to be like weird bad luck. A man not listening to a child about getting a rigging put down, that's not necessarily bad luck, that's just like shitty production.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Human error.
Yep. All right. Exorcist, are we cursed or not? I don't think it is.
I don't think it is either. I think that the thing with the set, the bedroom in the set not burning is weird. But it could also be the one and only coincidence, and the other ones are just, you know, people not respecting the actor's boundaries.
Yeah. So the omen is the only one.
Yeah, that one from our analysis. A little bit too much happening.
The Omen, yeah. The Omen was very weird. The Exorcist, I feel like people want it to be cursed because it's such, like, when we talk about all of these horror movies, the one that people will always mention is The Exorcist. That's like the one. And people like want it to be cursed, but The Omen is just like stacked of weird shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All of this reminds me of the Curse of the Scottish Play, or like Curse of Macbeth, and how...
What's that?
Like, have you guys never heard of the curse behind Macbeth?
Yeah, and how you're not supposed to say that word?
And you just said it twice.
The Curse of the Scottish Play. So it's rumored that Shakespeare, like, did a lot of research with the weird sisters, or like the witches in the play, and that he like used actual spells and stuff from like witches in the play. And like, it's unclear whether like people think an actual witch put a curse on the play, or whether it was like just all of the like violence and I guess witchcraft in the play that led to it being cursed. But supposedly in like the first production, the actress that played Lady Macbeth died like randomly out of nowhere. And then they also, like, at some point, one of the stage props, like the knife was switched out for a real knife. So then someone was actually stabbed on stage. I think it's Lord Duncan is his name. But that actor died because he was stabbed on stage. And then I don't remember exactly the date, but it was like sometime in the like 1800s or so. There was another like production put on, and that like led to a riot where like a couple hundred people were like injured, and like I think like 20 or 25 people like died during that riot. And like the actors were like involved with whatever happened, like was caused by the actors essentially. Like something happened and they like kind of went after each other, and then like this whole riot happened and a bunch of people died. And there's like a bunch of stuff about like people falling off stages and getting like terribly injured or like dying, and like lights and stage weights and stuff like that like falling down and crushing people, which like granted I don't think that's that uncommon, especially back then, but yeah, there's like definitely like a really big lore like curse idea around Macbeth, which is like terrible because I love that play. It's like my favorite. It's like my favorite Shakespeare play. And like, honestly, I'm like, being a theater nerd, I'm not actually that into Shakespeare, because he stole a lot of his work. And yeah, but Macbeth is like one that I'm like, okay, this is where it's at.
Isn't that where the bubble, bubble, toil and trouble comes from?
Yes.
All right, guys, that's it on Cursed Hollywood. Thank you so much for listening. We would love to know what you think of The Curses. If you think The Omen or The Exorcist or any other movie is cursed, feel free to shoot us a DM, make a review on Apple Podcasts, and leave a review writing what you think is cursed, and we would love to read it. And we will speak with you next Thursday. Bye, guys.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye, Stranglers.